I have stood in the field of Exeter, where Whitfield preached his very last sermon in New England in 1770, and it solemnized me as I stood there thinking of that dear man addressed that crowd of 4,000 in the open air that day. And I want to read us, before we go to our time of prayer, an excerpt from my two-volume definitive biography on Whitfield regarding the last hours Whitfield spent on this earth. First, I want to read from a record by Dr. John Gillies. Mr. Richard Smith, who attended Whitfield from England to America the last time, was his constant companion in all his journeyings while there until the time of his decease. And here's an excerpt of Whitfield's comments as he was getting ready to ascend the pulpit, friends. A Mr. Clarkson Sr., observing Whitfield to be more uneasy than usual, approached him and said to him, "Sir, you are more fit to go to bed than to preach." To which Mr. Whitfield answered, "True, sir," but turning aside, he clasped his hands together and looking up said, "Lord Jesus, I am weary in thy work, but not of thy work. If I have not finished my course, let me go and speak for thee once more in the fields, seal thy truth, and come home and die." His last sermon was from 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5. "Examine yourselves, whether ye be in the faith, prove your own selves. Know ye not your own selves, how that Jesus Christ is in you, except ye be reprobates?" He dined at Captain Gilman's after dinner, and Whitfield and Mr. Parsons rode to Newburyport. I traced that route where the two dear men rode on horseback to the inn that still stands, the manse that Whitfield died in. It's three doors down from the Old South Presbyterian Church in Newburyport, Massachusetts. And I want to read you what took place that evening, the last evening of George Whitfield's life, as he died from an attack of asthma or a combined heart attack on top of that, friends. And I want to read that from the direct record of his aide, Richard Smith, from his diary, who was with him at the moment that Whitfield died. Here now are Richard Smith's words. "And then Mr. Whitfield retired upstairs. He said that he would sit and read till I came to him, which I did as soon as possible, and found him reading in the Bible, with Dr. Watts' Psalms lying open before him. He asked me for some water, gruel, and took about half his usual quantity, and kneeling down by the bedside, closed the evening with prayer. After a little conversation, he went to rest and slept till 2 a.m, when he awoke me and asked for a little cider, of which he drank about a wine glass full. I asked him how he felt, for he seemed to pant for breath. He told me his asthma was coming on him again, and he must have 2 or 3 days' rest. 2 or 3 days' riding without preaching would set him up again. Soon afterwards, he asked me to put the window up a little higher, though it was up half all night. For, said he, I cannot breathe, but hope I shall be better by and by. A good pulpit sweat today may give me relief. I shall be better after preaching. I said to him, I wish he would not preach so often. He replied, I had rather wear out than rust out. I then told him, I was afraid he took cold in preaching yesterday. He said he believed he had, and then sat up in the bed and prayed that God would be pleased to bless his preaching where he had been, and also bless his preaching that day, that more souls might be brought to Christ, and prayed for direction whether he should winter at Boston or hasten to the southward, prayed for a blessing on his Bethesda College and his dear family there, for the tabernacle and chapel congregations and all connections on the other side of the water, and then laid himself down to sleep again. This was nigh 3 o'clock. At 4:15, he waked and said, My asthma's coming on. I wish I had not given out word to preach at Haverhill on Monday. I don't think I shall be able, but I shall see what today will bring forth. If I am no better tomorrow, I will take 2 or 3 days' ride. He then desired me to warm him a little gruel, and in breaking the firewood, I waked Mr. Parsons. That's Jonathan Parsons' friend, the pastor that Whitfield was staying with. I waked Mr. Parsons, who, thinking I knocked for him, rose and came in. He went to Whitfield's bedside and asked him how he felt himself. He answered, "I am almost suffocated. I can scarce breathe. My asthma quite chokes me." I was then not a little surprised to hear how quick and with what difficulty he drew his breath. He got out of bed and went to the open window for air. This was exactly at 5 o'clock. I went to him, and for about the space of 5 minutes saw no danger, only that he had a great difficulty in breathing, as I had often seen before. Soon afterwards he turned himself on me and said, "I am dying." I said, "I hope not, sir." He ran to the other window, panting for breath, but could get no relief. It was agreed I should go for Dr. Sawyer, and on my coming back I saw death on his face, and he again said, "I am dying." His eyes were fixed, his under lip drawn inward every time he drew breath. He went towards the window, and we offered him some warm wine with lavender drops, which he refused. I persuaded him to sit down in the chair and have his cloak on. He consented by a sign, but could not speak. I then offered him the glass of warm wine. He took half of it, but it seemed as if it would stop his breath entirely. In a little time, he brought up a considerable quantity of phlegm and wind. I then began to have some small hopes. Mr. Parsons said he thought Whitfield breathed more freely than he did and would recover. I said, "No, sir, he is certainly dying." I was continually employed in taking the phlegm out of his mouth with a handkerchief and bathing his temples with drops, rubbing his wrists and so on to give him relief, if possible, but all in vain. His hands and feet were as cold as clay. When the doctor came in and saw him in the chair leaning upon my breast, he felt his pulse and said, "He is a dead man." Mr. Parsons said, "I do not believe it. You must do something, doctor." He said, "I cannot. He is now near his last breath." And indeed so it was, for he fetched out but one gasp, stretched out his feet, and breathed no more. This was exactly at 6 o'clock. We continued rubbing his legs, hands, and feet with warm cloths and bathed him with spirits for some time, but all in vain. I then put him into a warm bed, the doctor standing by, and often raised him upright, continued rubbing him and putting spirits to his nose for an hour, till all hopes were gone. The people came in crowds to see him. I begged the doctor to shut the door. Well, friends, this is an excerpt from The Death of Whitfield, from my chapter on George Whitfield's life, and may it stir us to do great things for God like Whitfield did. May it stir us to be surrendered vehicles to God so God can do great things through us. Let us take this time now to pray.